At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Let's go.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Binge Down TV. I'm Paul, and here with me today are Luke and Jimmy. Today, we're talking about The Witcher Season 2, Episode 5 and 6, titled Turn Your Back and Dear Friend. We will be recording a discussion about these two episodes, even though they will be released individually. But keep your eye out for Episode 6 because it will be right out right after this. Two great episodes. Excited to hear you guys' thoughts. First of all, Jimmy, welcome to The Witcher coverage. I guess you can be considered the rookie for this coverage.
Definitely a rookie.
Definitely brand clean new slate, Witcher slate. So what are your thoughts on episodes 1 through 6 so far?
I'm really enjoying it. I didn't get a chance to listen to your guys' podcast, but I'm sure that you guys said that with Wheel of Time and The Witcher, we're just living the dream in the fantasy world right now. Definitely a rookie here. I read a little bit of The Witcher, so it was funny that I knew what was going on in episode 1 of season 2 because of that. Obviously, there's a couple changes from the book to the screen, but yeah, I'm enjoying it a lot. I'm going to need a little bit of help from you guys. Just it is a little confusing to me with some of the names. They're throwing a lot of stuff at us at once, but I'm really loving it so far.
And I want to reemphasize again, we may not on purpose be referencing things that happened in episode 6 because we are covering these two together, like Paul said. So I would avoid listening to this podcast until you have seen 6. I don't know, whatever's best. We might be slipping in a couple episode 6 spoilers here because it kind of flows together since we just binged them. I do want to say, though, I wasn't on last episode when you guys covered 3 and 4, the recording. I love those episodes. I wish I could retroactively go back and change my ratings for episode 1 and 2 to make more room for growth, because I think 3, 4, 5, and 6 have just been elevating this show so much. I'm thinking season 2 is already, in my opinion, better than season 1. Basically, the pulse I have from social media and Reddit and all that stuff is that a lot of people are pretty in for season 2. Like, Of course, there's an insane amount of changes from the books to the point where I don't even think they should be considered the same source material. Like, they're not the same source material. It's just the use of the world and some of the characters. Everything else is completely different, and we'll see how this season ends. But honestly, I'm liking the show take on this world and characters more than I liked the 7 books that I read. And that can change as we go on if writing gets sloppy. But there's just so much to love here. And the way that Netflix is doing it is just so visually appealing. And I like the character changes that they're making and the plot and what they're emphasizing in the plots with, like, all the monoliths and stuff like that and the conjunction of spheres. I just talked a lot there, but I've just been raving about this in my head. I can't wait to freaking dive into 5, 6 and watch 7, 8 after this.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch 7 and 8 right after. But to both of you guys, Luke and Paul, are you both fully caught up? Like, you've read everything for The Witcher?
There is one book called Season of Storms, I believe.
Season of Swords?
No, I'm. It's either Song of Storms or Season of Storms.
Well, that's a Storm of Swords is Game of Thrones.
Okay.
Book 3.
Yeah, which is one of the best books ever written.
Yeah, it's so such a great book.
This book wasn't technically, like, in linear storyline. It was kind of, I don't want to say not canon because it was canon, but it didn't really take place in the Geralt series storyline, I believe.
It was a super self-contained story. Basically, like, you've read a couple of the prequel chapters. It was like that, except expanded to a book about him finding his swords. Something
right.
like that.
Okay. So my question for you guys is, you know, talking to you about season 1, it was pretty much told to me that it was like a prequel almost, you know, mm-hmm. like based on what the books have given us. To me, now that I know that, it feels like we're just scratching the surface, and this, it could go like 10 seasons or something. Is that like fair? Like, is this really like, are you guys seeing it that way too with Ciri? It just seems like everything is just very, very early on.
I'll answer first, and then Paul, you correct me, because it seems like I think you're a little bit more in tune with the book knowledge than I am. I think that the way that things are moving is definitely fast. A lot of stuff is happening quickly, but I don't think it'll be 8 seasons. I'm thinking closer to 5 would be the sweet spot for me. Maybe even 4, based on what I'm hearing about the ending reveal in episode 8, which won't talk about now, but we'll talk about that next podcast. There's still so much to happen, and it depends how much they really want to adapt. But I think we're already hitting stuff that are in book 3 or 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. Like, we've said the name of book 2, which is Time of Contempt, in episode 5 or 6. They say that. So we're pretty much already like hitting towards the end of that. So we're already kind of, you know, we're moving. We're definitely moving.
Okay.
Yeah. It's interesting because, like Luke said, they are dropping a lot of reveals that you don't get until, you know, later in the books. At the same time, they're also just kind of making up whatever they want. You can't even like track it on the books because they're kind of doing their own thing. So I could see it going, you know, 5 seasons. I could see it going 10. If they just continue to make their own things, if they were to just make a seasons about the books. Yeah. I mean, I could see it going for 6 or something like that. 6 or 7, you know, it is really its own animal at this point.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I fucking love it.
Yeah, that question was mainly in my head after watching episodes 1 and 2, just because it seems so early in Ciri's journey. But they really have jumped a good amount in the last 4 or so episodes since we haven't seen 7 or 8, but up to episode 6. It really does seem like it has jumped.
In saying that, I don't think we talked about it, but did you guys see that Witcher is getting another spinoff called Witcher Blood Origin?
Mm-hmm. See the trailer? It was a teaser trailer. Yeah, it looked cool.
Wait, is it Henry or is it animated?
No, it's a prequel.
It's a prequel. It's about I believe it's about the first Witchers.
It's a very short teaser, but it was cool.
Yeah, they actually have it at the end of episode 8. So that's why I knew you guys didn't see it yet. But that being said, they're making up their own stories and doing that over there. So I don't know how much effort they're going to put into that compared to this series. I don't know if they're going to have multiple spinoffs of their own.
Yeah.
Anything's on the table is what
I mean. I've heard a lot of rumors just with them saying Witcherverse. It could be a million things. They could have a million shows if they want. It could be like the freaking Walking Dead universe where they're just like, we're going to start making all these spinoff shows.
The Walking Dead universe stole Lexa from The 100. So fuck
yeah,
them.
Right. I know.
All right. So let's get into episode 5. We are going to cover this episode in character buckets. And the first one we're going to start off with is Yen and Yaskier and a little bit of Rience. So just to get introduced to this new character, that is the opening scene of episode 5. It is Rience in a dungeon, and this woman is coming down to talk to him. And this is obviously super shitty dungeon. You see like the rats running around and everything. And Jimmy, I just want to like, what was your reaction? I want to know your reaction to seeing this guy and who you thought he was initially.
I thought it was just so cool. I knew it just was the snaps just over and over with him just snapping in the background. And it's like the in the shadows and dark. And you could tell that this person was going to be somebody like badass and important. And before she even says it, you could tell that he's been sitting there in solitude for a long time. And he's just sitting there with the snap. It was just very, very cool to it with the visuals and just that hearing with the audio, the snapping in the background. I didn't really have too much of a theory of who he was going to be, but as soon as they show him, I'm like, all right, this guy's going to be a badass.
Dude, I have been waiting for Rience to pop up. He is not like a super complex character. Like, he's pretty surface level. You get what you see, but this is almost the best version of what I imagined in my head for the book of the character so far. Pretty much spot on to like how he gets the burns and like the way he acts and like his goals. So far, so good. I think Rience is just, it's pretty fantastic.
So when it comes to Rience, he is the firefucker. Okay. Like, he's the guy who's using the firepower. And he explains a little bit later, you know, how it works. And you guys can get into that if you want to. But just my quick question is that could be something that Yen could do if she wanted. Like obviously her big thing inside in the battle was that she used the fire and you're not supposed to, and it drained her chaos as far as we know right now. Now, Rian said that when you're using the fire, you know, if you're strong enough, you can control it, but it eats away at your soul or something like that, he said. So, I mean, I feel like the two of them, if they do get to have more of a confrontation, would be pretty damn interesting.
Yeah, you're asking dangerous questions, because the magic system is so crazy in the show. It's mm-hmm. so its own animal, like we were saying. And yeah, that honestly confuses me just to get into Rian's. He uses fire magic, but I don't understand why they would make him use fire magic when they make it such a taboo. I understand that because it's consuming his whole, it's making him, you know, a little crazy, maybe a little sane. I didn't understand how he said you can draw chaos from fire. Well, why do you draw chaos from fire to make fire? So it confuses me.
My two absolute, nothing even comes close to these two factors in the Netflix show, least favorite things about the Netflix Witcher are, first, how they treat every Witcher that's not Geralt or Vesemir. And Paul, you and Kyle did a good job of kind of shitting on that a little bit in 3 and 4, rightfully so. Eskel sucked, Lambert trash, like all of that is just, I don't know who greenlit that stuff. Take that aside, my second least favorite thing, or tied with that, is totally whatever they're doing with this fire magic, because I thought it was fine with what they had Yennefer do. She touched the fire magic, she loses her powers. That's fine. That's what it's supposed to be. Yeah. Now they're adding in this little, like, basically, if you're like kind of in touch with your darkness and you don't care about your soul, you can use the fire. It's stupid. I don't like it at all, because it seems like it's his whole thing. Like, he only uses fire. Yeah. I don't like that at all.
And it also kind of, I don't want anybody to be telling me, like, unless I'm misquoting him, I thought he said something about, like, if you're strong enough, as, like, the first part of a sentence. And don't tell me Yen's not strong enough.
Exactly.
Man.
She's. I don't like that.
Also, when it comes to Rian's, man, totally Colonel Mustang for Full Metal Alchemist. I kept getting those vibes, like, with him snapping his fingers with the gloves, man. Holy shit. I got those vibes right away.
That's awesome. I didn't even think about that.
Neither did I.
Luke, when you're talking about the Witchers other than Geralt, are you saying, like, because they're not getting any respect, the show's not giving them any respect or character? What did you mean?
In my
that?
Head, all of the Witchers are basically like Geralt. They're not like these fucking, just like, they're assholes to people. They're supposed to be like Geralt and Vesemir, like just solemn, very rarely show emotions. They're not going to fuck with Ciri. Like, why would you? I don't like any of that.
Okay.
They take Ciri in as like one of their own. They train her and all this other stuff. They care about her. But in the show, they make all the Witchers kind of like shit on them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's to like isolate them from different humans, because they don't have feelings or something like that. But I mean, Triss basically talked about it and was like, dude, you guys should be ashamed of yourselves. You guys would be an asshole to this girl.
I'll stop talking about the last recording just because it's fresh in my mind. But the last thing I'll say is that I totally agree with what you were saying in episode 3, Paul, that I hated the conversation that Lambert had with Geralt about killing Eskel. And when he's like blaming him, you're the one that killed our brother. Like, what the fuck, dude, that was just poor writing.
Should understand how that shit works. Yeah. And yeah, I pretty much took it like they're writing them as like just basic mercenaries that you see in like Game of Thrones or something, where they're like, give us our alcohol, let's get hammered, we're mean to everyone, and we just want to fight, which you know, obviously is not what they should be based on what we know about Geralt and Witchers.
Mm-hmm.
So to continue with this Rian storyline, he learns that this woman that came down to talk to him, Lydia, isn't actually working for Nilfgaard. He also learns Calanthe is dead, the whole reason he was in there, he crossed her a while back, it seems. So now he is hired by this woman. He doesn't know who she is employed by, but his goal is to find this girl who was last seen on the outskirts of Sotten. We go from there, cut back to episode 5 mm-hmm. of our boy Yaskier just singing. Mm-hmm. Phenomenal. I was so happy. You know, we get Yaskier again because why not? He's the absolute man. I love the song so much. I was playing it earlier today. But
dude, how did they follow up Toss a Coin with the Witcher? This is such a freaking jam, and they play it twice. Yasker's, every time he's on the screen, it's just a smile on my face.
I know. It's the best. And I asked Kyle, I said, hey, I'll ask you guys too. Which song do you like better? And Kyle said, Toss a Coin. But I was like, yeah, Toss a Coin because it's iconic. But it was a close one.
Super close.
It's very close. Yeah. I still go Toss a Coin, but I can sing it more and it's just more catchy to me. But I like both of them.
Dude, I love his hair too. I didn't get to this because this is my first pod with him being a character again. And he's just, Jim, if you didn't know, he's like one of the weird characters that they changed his name for some reason. It's Dandelion in the books, Dandelion sometimes.
Oh, I did know that. Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes I mix them up, but just like Yasker, the actor, amazing.
Kyle was talking shit on his hair last episode.
Fuck
so.
Kyle.
Kyle usually likes long hair on men, dude.
Yeah, he said he wasn't feeling it. But I actually did, after seeing this, I went back to episode 5 and rewatched that scene to see if Rance was there. And at the end of the performance, it does pan to the crowd clapping. And then there's this one dude in Rance's jacket, just kind of like staring at the ground, not clapping, and his hair's covering his face. And I was like, that's awesome. They do put it in there just in case. Before the reveal. Exactly. Yeah. So he ends up being the one that takes Yashgir. And Yen, she is not on the boat anymore. She got off and it says, you know, it's going, it's leaving the port. Yen's like, fuck. She drops another F-bomb. I forgot. I need to keep Yen F-bomb count going because it is like 25 at this point.
Dude, she's so good at her delivery of it. It just sounds good coming out of her mouth. and they knew that.
We also see that old elf being strung up again. Oh, you got to show us that. But it was cool because it is very reminiscent of the books. Geralt will just come into a town and they'll just have a dead body hanging from like the trees right at the front gates and shit like that. It's just the world that they live in. It's just brutal. But we also get Yashgir. We find him tied up in the chair. And this classic Yashgir just talk. He's in this dark room. He's like, hey, if it was your wife, your mistress. Sorry, man. Like, it wasn't me. You got the wrong guy. You're a crazy fan. Like, I don't talk about my work. And then, you know, he gets introduced to Rience and his fire snaps.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how I didn't think of Mustang.
I couldn't. Yeah, totally. I can't even write down all of the quotes that Yasker says that are so funny. So I just don't write any of them because everything he says is just hilarious. But honestly, the funniest part of this entire scene to me was, after this whole torture begins, Yennefer walks in. She's acting all hammered.
Yeah.
Freaking dying, dude. It literally made me think of Family Guy.
Yeah.
It was like, I knew I'd find you here, you lazy lout. Let me at home to rot. And then just kisses him on the head and shit like that.
Yes.
I want her that Yen more often.
Yennefer and Yasker have such a good back and forth. How he eventually ends up calling her. He's like, oh, he's giving her a hug and stuff. He's like, says something about like her having snakes in her feet, in her shoes or whatever. He says all these things to her. And that's a really good representation of how their back and forth is in the books. He's always saying like, you're a fucking evil bitch. And she's like, fuck you. And they just go back and forth, but they help each other at the end of the day.
And I was pretty badass. She downs the liquor when Rian's, you know, pins her against the wall and just spits it in his face to give him the scar.
That was awesome.
Giving him the scar is in line with the books. I can't believe they made Yen lose her powers. It's nuts.
She'll get them back, dude. Don't you worry.
I hope so. We'll see.
Next episode, maybe. Episode 7.
What do you guys think of that beautiful, beautiful lady of the night that we saw Yen talking to try to get information on? If you saw
Lady of the Night.
Like the
young one who
harlot.
Turns her into.
Yeah, yeah.
My God.
She was disgusting.
She says something like, oh, like if you want a twisted mermaid, that's going to cost extra. And she's like, my knees aren't as good as they always
are. Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, my God. She will come into play later, as you guys know. Yen and Yashgir now are on the run. Yashgir's, you know, like, dude, just use your magic again. Oh, wait, I forgot. You can't. You're useless now. And he's like, what the hell? You can't be the damsel in distress. I'm the damsel in distress.
Yeah. The amount of times that Yen's had people tell her since she's lost her magic to use her magic. And she's like, sorry, bro. It's And Yaskir is the only one who she ended up telling that she lost it, right? Because,
Yeah. Besides Thisaya.
And Ciri eventually, right?
Yeah. Ciri at the very end of 6. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they actually get chased again by a different group. They get split up. Yashgir has a line. He's like, many men have wanted to punch me in the face. Now's your chance. Come get some. And runs away. What a good guy. And then Yen actually gets caught by this wonderful, wonderful lady that betrayed her and actually called guards in. Yen's all tied up. Yaskier ends up kind of finding her. He sees the guards talking about this lady that they're trying to turn in. And as he's looking through the window, she disappears because she starts chanting the Deathless Mother. I think we knew that was her name, but we get it again in the chant. She says, you know, like Deathless Mother, hut, hut, and teleports.
Yeah. And then that just takes us to back to the cabin. And then we finally get the exchange conversation. They're going to have a trade where if she brings Ciri to her, then the witch is going to restore her powers, right?
Because the whole thing was Yen never actually agreed to a deal with the Deathless Mother. Like in the beginning, the other two did, Francesca and Frangilla did. And when Yen is tied up right here, she has a line where the whispers are coming in saying, like, the other two, they're doing way better than you. One has power and one has hope. Like, they're getting their wishes. You're still fucked. Why don't you come say the words and make a deal with me and I'll tell you what to do. So she finally gives in. After not giving in, when she had to behead Kahir way back, she would rather run away and be like a refugee than admit that she doesn't have powers. Yen is just such a complicated character.
So I have a question. I guess this is, could be a little bit more for Jimmy. Was there a price already paid or will have to be paid by Frangilla and Francesca for getting what they want? Because it seems like Yennefer has to pay a price if she wants to get her wish.
Yeah, I'm wondering if the price is going to be something that has to do with their alliance being in line with the Deathless Mother wants from her goals, you know, maybe because they obviously are looking for Ciri too. Well, Nilfgaard is. The fairies don't care, right? At this point, they don't have anything to do with Ciri. Or I'm sorry, Jesus.
The elves.
The fairies, you killed them all. That was a cool. That was
awesome.
The elves don't care right now about Ciri, right? Only Nilfgaard does.
Yeah. They're the only ones actively going for it.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I could think of is that their alliance has something to do with what the Deathless Mother wants. And that's why it's not fully like a price.
Okay. Yeah, I don't really know. Because, again, this character's made up, so it's total guesswork at this point.
Yeah. And the last thing she says to Yen as Ciri, you know, they're in the hut, and she says, all you have to do is deliver me to the right lock. You know, I'm the key. It is a shattered black door right outside Syntra. And speaking of that shattered black door, we get Istrid and Geralt. And what did you guys think of their interactions of Geralt coming in on the portal and Istrid, like, getting all standoffish? And Geralt's just like, dude, I need a breath. I don't like mortals.
I need a second, man.
It was a good reaction. Like, that's how he should have acted. He's fucked with mages for so long. He knows. Like, he just instantly puts up his blocker, which was cool. Shows that he's pretty adept with magic. I mean, if you see Geralt, like, are you fucking kidding me? This dude with white hair, cat eyes, he's coming at you. He's huge as shit. I'm fucking putting up my wall, too.
Yeah, I just think that their back and forth in general is awesome, especially a little bit later when they talk about Yen. He had the right reaction by putting up the shield, and Geralt's just hilarious because he's just like, give me a second, man. Give me a second. And, you know, he doesn't care. He's like, he's not afraid of any mages or anything. He's just like, I'm going to take a seat for a second.
Kyle had a really good point where he was like, out of all the episodes we've seen of him, that was without a doubt the most vulnerable looking he's ever been.
Yeah, I mean, it's true.
He did not have his wits about him. But
and he says he hates it too, right before he does it.
Yeah, he's like, portals are no good, but he still does it. Geralt comes and says, hey, you must be the mage Triss sent me. She told me you are a monolith expert and I need your help. Why the hell is this monster coming out of a monolith? And he just drops it at his feet. That thing's nasty looking, and I would be pissed that he got its brains all over my clean floor. So they actually go looking for the monolith right outside of Syntra. I just loved the little line where Istrid's saying, are you always this talkative? Or, you know, should I take it personally? Because Geralt just like, it's weird. Geralt is either nonstop talking, like in the books, all he does is have conversations, or he's just like a statue and just head on and doesn't say a word.
If he's with his homies, he'll talk. But otherwise, he's like, I'm going to chill.
So we're right outside Syntra right now, is what you're saying, right? Right near the gap. And this is right as the Nilfgaardians are showing up. I think it's like four or five of them. And they fucked them up. And it was awesome to see Istrid using some battle magic, too, to actually help out and show he can hold some weight. Because the whole Istrid thing is like, he's in one of the short stories, I think, Jimmy, from the books, and that's it. Like, he's just one off thing. And their whole thing is they fight over Yennefer, I think. Like, they literally have a lover's fight over, like, super early, and then he's never really talked about again. I'm starting to like this character, especially in season two. I was a little against him in season one, obviously, because he kind of was
turned her in, man.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he was fucking over Yennefer, but he seems like he's got a good head on his shoulders. In the scene before in the library, he announces he's basically team elf. He doesn't care about Elfgard.
Elfgard.
That's what they should call it now.
Yeah.
Yes. So he's got a good head on his shoulders. And then in episode six, he's like knowledge seeking. So I like what Istrid's got going on. He's a much better character than I thought he was going to be.
Yeah, he's definitely a really good, interesting addition as well. Like you said, they didn't really have too much on him, but the way they integrated him into this story of the monoliths, keeping to his, you know, researching, like archaeology, history, love, is really cool. And it's actually very helpful to have him to explain why all this is happening. Yeah, like you said, they got confronted by the guards, and Geralt is just sick of the shit, walks up and knocks him out. He's like, yeah, I know that. That's the easiest way. But then they do get to the giant monolith, and Istrid's reaction is insane. He's like, this is a historical revelation. Mm-hmm. Like, the amount of energy to topple this thing. And meanwhile, Geralt's like, I don't see any tracks or bones or anything. Like, I need to go down there. And Istrid's like, count me in. I'm going down too.
This leads to like the biggest just info dump ever of like big picture shit.
Yeah.
And I actually really enjoy it. Like, they start talking about the scars of the conjunction, theorizing like what these monoliths actually were. And it turns out they're basically like the eels from Aretusa, where they're going to be the conduits that kind of, it's all theory, I guess, but they kind of caused the conjunction of the spheres. And in my head, and tell me if this is what you guys are thinking too, like, is the conjunction of spheres basically just the mixture of like the multiverse of like four different worlds into this world, and that each world is basically like monsters are coming from here, dwarves from here, humans from here? That's pretty much what it was, right? And like the monoliths are acting as the conduits. It's a little confusing still, but that's pretty much where I'm at.
In the books, I believe that it was just a conjunction of the spheres. And I think the show, Mister just said right here, it's going their own way. So, you know, the monsters didn't exist on this plane before the conjunction. So all species were separated on different spheres until all the spheres joined together. But that would require a massive surge of energy and conduits to channel it. What if the monoliths were the points, weren't the points of impact? They were actually the conduits to channel it. And these spheres, they never merged. They collided and then separated again. So Geralt comes up and says, okay, so you're saying the original spheres are still out there somewhere and our monoliths are calling to them. And then the monsters aren't new. They're just new to our world here. And they're using the monolith as gateways.
Damn.
So this sounds like there was a mini conjunction where some of the worlds like perma collided, but there are still the original spheres out there and the monoliths are being used as gateways.
All because our girl Ciri
knocked it over
because
she screamed. It's insane. It's a very cool take on it, I guess.
It's a super unique fantasy concept that I am not familiar with it. And that's why this is one of the things that it separates the show from the books extremely. And I really, really like it. It seems like we're leaning into this because this is maybe the fifth time they've said the word conjunction this season. And it seems like that they're going to, like, this is going to be the end game, I'm assuming, of the whole series.
Feels like it has to be. It's crazy to think that, you know, there's other worlds out there and the series opening portals for them. That's insane. Istrid is like, okay, this is insane. How do you even know about this? Like, tell me how the monsters and the monoliths are linked. If you have information that can advance our civilization, I have the right to know. And I just thought that's insane. Because that is like world breaking at that point. Like,
yeah, part of the brotherhood. So having him be caught up is important.
Yeah, and he's a historian too. So
this is where they have the awkward conversation. Geralt says, "Why should I tell you? So you can go help the elves. I know that's why you're not really here." And Istrid says, "You know, okay. If I'm honest, I came here to find a woman, Yennefer of Vengeburg. Yenna. Yeah, you know Yenna." And he goes, "Yen. Don't call her Yenna." He did call Istrid called Yenna in episode 3, and she goes, "Don't call me that." Don't call me that. This is the awkward conversation. You know her. Yes, I did. Me too. You loved her. Loved and never stopped loving. I thought after Sodden, after everything they did to her at Aretuza, she'd make our way. She'd make her way here. And Geralt's like, wait, after Sodden, Yen's alive? Finally,
he finds out. Yep.
You know, if you're hoping for more of a reaction from him, he's a Witcher, so he's probably not going to give it to you.
And he gave her a pretty good reaction when they actually did meet.
I liked it. We'll talk about that soon. But
yeah,
that gets broken up by, I think, scene. It goes away, but comes back eventually. And then we have the new monster. Paul, do you have the name of him? Because I know he gets name dropped in episode 6.
Chernabog.
Yeah, he pops out and he looks awesome. And you said this episode 3. Dude, you could see how much money they spent on the monsters. Like how I think you did a perfect job of explaining the reasoning behind when the Leshy that killed Eskil popped up. Like they said, fuck him. We already spent the money on that. Let's bring in this new guy. And every single monster has looked so good so far.
It is great. This one was really cool. It kind of, we don't see it get formed, but we do hear Ciri scream in a different scene. She yells for Geralt. Geralt actually hears this in the trench. Istrid does as well. And then we see fragments of the Stellacite from the monolith just start flying. And all of a sudden we see, it looks like the Stellacite was like its wings and its back as well. Mm-hmm. This dragon looking thing just come in, fly off. He just looks great, especially when we get him next episode, just kind of flying around. Like we get his view as well. I love how they are leaning into the monsters more than maybe the books did.
And we could pick back up at the end of that once we go through the Ciri part. But I think another takeaway is that Istrid's going to go back and study the Royal Line of Syntra, right? But that, I think that's because of the whole, like, doesn't Ciri's voice pop up here because of Ciri's storyline?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
While she's going through her vision.
Yeah, but that doesn't make sense to talk about yet. So I think we put a pin in that.
Do you want to do Cahir and Fragilla real quick?
Yeah, that's fine.
The first actual scene we get of Cahir is he's having nightmares on a boat. And this is the boat that he was supposed to be on with Yen. Yen obviously didn't go. It's full of elves and it's going to Syntra. He is having a nightmare of the monolith falling, you know, in front of him, separating him from Ciri. So, you know, it's all connected. But when he does go onto the deck, he does see they get to Syntra and Fringilla. We get Fringilla looking out the window, seeing the boat come in. Her, Frin and Fran, as I like to call them, they go down to meet him at the gate.
She looks pregnant as fuck.
Yeah, gonna pop any day.
Got to Syntra.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right.
Syntra or Zintria?
Yeah. Okay, so it's their new name, right?
Which is all the right. Elvish pronunciation of it. They're talking about how they were getting less and less elf arrivals each day, though, because they are kind of being hunted by the north now. So they go down to meet the ship, and of course, Cahir is just being a piece of shit, trying to cut the line. It's like, bro, you went through all this and now you're going to be a douche again. Like, just wait in line, tell him your name and then go up and see Fringilla. But of course, he had to make a scene. He actually had the cool I am Commander Mar Different Ap Kaliach. Who the fuck are you? How was that pronunciation? Was that good?
That was good, really, dude. Good.
And then Fringilla. Oh, okay, here. You're not dead. That's cool. Good to see you. Welcome back. So he is officially back with Fringilla. We also real quick got Dara. Dara was in the line.
Yeah.
Last time we saw him, King Vizimir was sending him. King Vizimir and Dijkstra were sending him to be a spy.
And why did they have him in the first place? Because they had him in a cell, right?
Yeah. We didn't see it, but we assume he was just an elf that got wrangled up when the North started to imprison him.
Okay. Didn't he get separated from Ciri in the Brokilon Forest back?
Mm-hmm.
They were in the Brokilon Forest, and then the doppelganger that was pretending to be Malsak came.
Yep.
Yep.
And then they left Brokilon Forest. And after that incident, Dara was like, everywhere you go, like you cause death, like I'm done following you. And then they separated.
Okay.
Really should have stayed with her because she's fine. And he is now in a prison. Wasn't in prison.
I don't have much more to say just about the Cahir and Dara storyline. It's way more important than the next episode, but whatever else you guys have to say here.
No, that was just their reunion coming back together.
Mm-hmm.
But that does have a big impact going forward, like you said.
Right, it does, yep.
Just while we're here too, Jimmy, what is your opinion about Cahir as a character so far through these 6 episodes?
We're talking about the Black Knight here?
Yes.
Okay, so obviously he was the villain in season 1, and he breaks out with Yen. And a lot of times that's usually where they give like the, let's have a little, nice little turn, a comeback story and make him a good guy or something. You know, he has like an okay relationship with Yen, but I like that even though we went through that whole thing, yeah, I guess he's kind of nice to Yen, but he's still a douche. You know, he's still a bad dude. I guess he's sympathetic right now with the elves, but he wants to take back control. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that he's still going to stay villainous.
So the only thing I'll say on it is that Kahir, I'm a super victim of like his character in the books. This is one of the plot points I think they're going to keep, like his end game from the books. So I know they're going to go from where we are now to like point A to point B, his end game. And I just don't like
it.
No,
it gets... Oh, okay.
Like, I don't think they're going to get there in a way that's going to satisfy me. So it's causing me to be like anti-Kahir. Mm-hmm. And I think I currently still am anti-Kahir, even though I heard his actor's just like one of the coolest dudes ever. Everyone on set loves him. He's the freaking man. He's a good actor and all that. It's just the decisions they make, I just feel like he's just full, just... I won't say much. All I'll say is right now, I'm waiting to really give my judgment on him until, I guess, after the season.
I was having the exact same feelings you were, Luke, and I think you will feel a bit better at the end of the season. Okay. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Good to hear.
I love Kahir's character.
So wait, are you caught up?
He's so complicated. You, me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you've watched everything?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So you can't give any theories. It's just me and Luke. All right.
Nah, you don't want to hear my theories.
After
bad,
we recorded episode 2, he watched the next 6.
I hope you didn't have any freaking money theories in episodes 3 and 4 then, dude.
I was watching this whole time and I was like, what the fuck is happening? I have no idea. It's just its own story.
I mean, I really liked how we're going to get to it. You know, when Ciri has her soul, what is it? The soul quest, vision quest deal, whatever it is that Triss puts her in. Don't laugh, bro. Don't laugh.
Vision quest? Wait, what was it called?
Well, we're talking Winona Earp now when we say vision quest. But
true. Okay.
Or Blue Mountain State.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. And Family Guy and a lot of things. But.
All right. Let's jump into this storyline.
Okay. Then I'll talk about that then.
Yeah, so we have Ciri, Triss, and Vesemir. You can throw him in here. And Ciri, the first shot we get of her is she's training on the pendulum again. What do you guys think of her and that whole training sequence?
Love it.
I think it's great. Just subtle character development for her Witcher skills, because you don't know how much time passed and you got to assume a decent amount based on some random quotes that happened throughout here.
Mm-hmm. Listen, I am very, very, very blind when it comes to anything that's going to happen with this show. Like I said, I've only read a little bit of the books and Ciri wasn't even involved. I have no idea where she's going, but I loved how in the promos for this season, it's showing her with the swords and ready to fight and being a badass. And as soon as she said, like, I want to train, I was like, all right, I was going to say the typical character. I don't want it to sound like I'm saying typical, but the typical badass female character that is like a child, but she's going to freaking turn into this major badass. And she wants to train with Geralt and the rest of the Witchers. And honestly, to your point, Luke, with the other Witchers not being great, the only thing that they are good at is these training scenes with her, even though they're being assholes. It's more so like the, you're one of us. You're going to take our jests while we tell you you're weak, you know? So keep going. And then they're all impressed when she actually goes through the training sequences and everything. But yeah, I loved all the training sequences. And to flash forward for a second, we're going to get there, but I had no idea if it was going to go through with it, with the whole turn her into a Witcher thing. I didn't think so. But I'm just blind when it comes to Ciri. I have no idea really what's coming next for her.
To me, Ciri just seems like Arya Stark if she was the chosen one.
Yeah, exactly.
Like her story. And Arya Stark was my favorite Game of Thrones character. Hell, That's why these little moments showing her train and get better and become more of a savage, like, they're so good for me. And that's why episode 3 is when she really started training, was so awesome.
And her actor, Freya Allen, has been absolutely killing it this season. I love her. I think when I think of Ciri, I picture her now.
Yep. Yeah, she's killing it. Now, in the books, how old is she actually supposed to be? Because I know that they're calling her like child and stuff in the show, and she's 20 in real life, but is she supposed to be like how Game of Thrones is, and she's supposed to be like a kid in the books, like a kid, or?
I think
more time passes, so it's hard to
guess. Yeah. I was going to say, when Geralt and Ciri first meet, I think she's like 13. like 14. But I mean, when she's at training care more and stuff like that, I think she gets up to like 15, 16. It is working out well. Luke, you said this before, at what age they did get Freya Allen. She did look a little bit younger, and she is kind of aging up as the seasons go on.
They definitely,
exactly,
she
like
looked,
Maisie Williams. Exactly.
Yeah, she
like
definitely it. Looked way younger in season one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently it was the eyebrows. I didn't know that, but they dyed her eyebrows brown.
Really?
Emily pointed it out. That's the only reason. And I was like, of course. I would have never seen that in a million years.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously didn't cover season one on the pod, and I'm just saying this now because it would have been noticed in season one, but I just love the contact lenses for the different characters with different eye colors and stuff.
All of them. Vesemir, yeah. Ciri, yep. Geralt, Yennefer.
I mean,
Yen's
just does it for me with the purple, yeah.
That's what Daenerys should have been wearing, exactly those.
Wasn't it Danny that said Emilia Clarke was supposed to, and she can't do contacts or something?
100%.
Yeah.
Wow. Weak.
Geralt or Henry almost went blind, and Daenerys is freaking out. Whatever.
Yeah.
So this whole few beginning scenes of this trio that we get is Vesemir talking to Triss, bringing up the Elder Blood again. You know, he just discovered Ciri. You know, wherever she spills her blood, this Fane weed is blooming. Mm-hmm. Therefore, she must have Elder Blood in her, and that is a key ingredient to creating more Witchers. So they're kind of having this moral dilemma. Should we go through with it? Should we not? Vesemir actually gets Ciri and brings her kind of to a little history museum and saying, you know, when the conjunction happened, all spheres of beasts collided, mages weaponized monsters and tried to conquer the lands with them. Fucking idiots. The monsters destroyed everything. And then 300 years ago, mages weaponized man, mutated them with elixirs, made them faster, stronger, brutal enough to kill the beasts. Witchers saved humanity from extinction. But do you know why there are fewer and fewer of us? Because we can't make more witchers. Mm-hmm. Tells her about Feynweed and what it is. And then Ciri actually puts it together by herself. Oh, shit. I have elder blood, but my grandmother hated elves. And Vesemir's like, hey, sometimes what we hate most is something we can't change about ourselves.
Right.
And that was part of the conversation, like at the very beginning of that stuff, is when Vesemir has that like tiny line that says he and all the witchers are impressed with their growth. And that implies time passage.
Yes.
Yes. There you go. Yes. That was nice. You know, mm-hmm. She comes in and after training hard, and Vesemir's like, hey, I thought you were going to be like a snot-nosed brat of a princess. Mm-hmm. And you are.
And you
but
are. Like,
yeah. But you also are impressing us out there.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's nice. This is the Karen Warren that I wanted Ciri to have from the beginning. Like she has very fond memories of the place and she feels like a family.
Yeah. Because the other witchers aren't in the scenes.
Exactly.
That leads Vesemir to eventually telling Ciri, I don't know if it's Vesemir or Triss, but that, you know, like she is down to help create more witchers on the one condition that they tested on her first.
Yeah.
And I was like shocked that that was like how the dialogue went. And I was all fucking about it. I wanted them to give her the stuff so freaking badly. And initially Vesemir chimes back saying like, no, I can't do it. You're basically Geralt's child. Like he'll kill
right.
me. But then she walks away from the scene saying like, I'm freaking doing it.
Yeah. And he says, you know, I had a million kids, boys here, and not many of them made it. This is where pain exists and people die, and I can't let you die. You're Geralt's daughter.
Ciri has a nice line at the end of this when she's saying, come on, please, I'm meant for this. She says, all of those boys' suffering would have been for nothing when you guys die out. Like, come on. And she's getting invested in his head a little bit. Eventually, we get a scene of just her filling up a vial of her blood. They just kind of agree to it. Triss is on board. Let's not ask Geralt, her guardian, her dad. It's okay.
That's what I was gonna say. Like, if I was Geralt, I would have been way more pissed at Vesemir that he was letting this happen without Geralt being involved. But
absolutely,
yeah.
We see them do the potion. Triss actually, you know, does a little bit of concocting with some leaves and some ingredients. We find out it works. We see them like pouring the blood in there too. There's a lot of blood. And Ciri's like, okay, just give me 1 second to get ready. So Triss is like, get ready for what?
Yeah, Triss has like, no idea.
Oh yeah, by the way, she wants to be the first one. This leads to the whole vision quest that you
vision
were talking
quest
about.
Gives him a couple shrooms and
yeah, it's actually called
go to Mars, dude.
Let's go to Mars, dude. Is that when they're trying to eat the pig? It's yeah. Bill Clinton.
Yeah. And Peter. Eat that pig, man.
Dude. So the vision quest that you're talking about is called Dalduza or something like that. That's okay. What Trish says. Valley of the Soul. Doesn't matter. They go in, and basically what happens is they enter the deepest layer of Ciri's unconsciousness. And by doing this, they can find things that may have been hidden, can find genetic memories that tell the story of who you really are. Oh, it's not dangerous. It's not dangerous. It just requires us to trust each other.
So, you know, it's super dangerous. And
yeah, super, right.
Super dangerous.
Something bad's going to happen.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. They are seeing kind of everybody that she has cared about in her past. She sees Dara, Calanthe. She actually ends up seeing Kahir too. And Triss tells her, oh, don't worry. Nothing can hurt you here. All of this is, you know, just you. And then she ends up seeing Pavetta, her mother, as you were saying, who actually speaks to Ciri. Mm-hmm. And this is when Triss is like, wait, you can see us? Like, that's not how this is supposed to work at all.
Right.
And then everybody in her subconscious, like, starts looking at her. And Triss is like, this isn't how it's supposed to go at all.
What I was going to say when we were talking about the Black Knight and you're asking my opinion of him, I just took it from this vision quest that him being the complete enemy to Ciri, you know, and him doing the shaky thing that happens to only the certain people that are part of the vision quest that really matter. I just think that he's straight villain. Like it's telling you that if she's our girl, then he's going to be the villain, one of the big villains.
Okay.
We see Ciri's father, Dooney, and mother, Pavetta, holding a baby, Cirilla. This is the night that they die because they talk about getting on a boat and fleeing. When Ciri vocalizes that, Pavetta snaps her head and looks up again. There was a little crackle in the fire behind it, and little ashes went up. I like that little effect. Thought I'd put that out. Trish is like, all right, we need to go because this is insane that everything is happening. They end up following a bright light. A very ominous voice. They just follow it. I don't know why, but they do. And they end up seeing a bloody elf holding a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like everything around her is just completely ravaged.
And
did
I
you
like
guys catch what she was saying and what Ciri said?
I know she drops the name of book two in this part where she says Time of Contempt. And if for anyone listening that's read the books, when I say book two, I mean the second book in the plot line series. I've been saying the book numbers wrong, I guess, technically, because the prequel books are technically book one and two, and I don't count them. I count Elder Blood as book one and Time of Contempt as book two. So, like, this is kind of book two stuff here, or again, prophetic prophecies, for lack of a better way. Just talking about like what's going to happen. And then you also see the Wild Hunt in the sky happening, like all this chaos and destruction's going on. It seems like kind of Armageddon. And I think. She while this is going on, isn't the elf holding Triss by her fucking neck right there?
Eyes
too?
Rolling.
Yeah.
First of all, what because, the fuck was Triss doing trying to heal somebody like, in her self-conscious?
Triss is literally the one who said they're not real, they can't hurt you, they don't mean anything. And then she goes to help heal the elf. Yeah, it was just weird that she goes after her, and I knew that as soon as she went near her, because every other big part, the person, whether it's the mom or the grandmom or whatever, looks over at Ciri and you know, she's saying, Triss is saying, this isn't how it's supposed to be. I knew the elf was going to do something crazy. She grabs her by the throat. Eyes are rolling. Obviously, Ciri's eyes are starting to roll, too, while the prophecy's being said. So it was some crazy shit.
Yeah.
Child of Elderblood, child of wrath, the time of contempt is nigh. The world will die amongst frost and will be reborn. Reborn of Elderblood, of the seed that has been sown, a seed that will not sprout or burst into flame.
Just going to drop two book titles right in that quote. Jesus.
Yeah. They're just, what the hell does that mean? Like hearing that for the first time. Jimmy, what'd you take away from that?
Well, what I can say is that I took away the next scene where they come out of the vision quest and Triss just loses her shit, man. Yeah. And obviously there's like two sides to this in my head. My one viewpoint was like, Triss, you're supposed to be like her girl. You put her through this. You see what you see. I get it. It looks like a prophecy and it looks real, but I feel like you should more so be trying to comfort Ciri and see if there's anything you can do about it than freaking out and telling her, you know, you are going to destroy the entire world. You would think Ciri would freak out more than Triss did, but Ciri kind of just got up and walked away from it. I know that mages are big on you know, and obviously the Witcher world are big on like the prophecies and believing that kind of stuff. But I thought Triss's ridiculous reaction mm-hmm. was, you know, a little bit much when you're doing it right towards Ciri. I mean, you can hold it in and go talk to Vesemir about it or something. Don't throw it all at this little girl.
Like she does at the end of episode 6, right?
Yeah, like don't throw it at this freaking little girl and say, you know, you're a piece of shit, basically. Like,
I totally agree.
Sloppy. Yeah.
I hated Trish's reaction written in big bold letters because, like, she starts screaming at her saying, you're going to destroy us all. It's your fault. She was like, what did I do? I didn't do anything. So, yeah, she runs out. She goes right to Vesemir. She's like, I want it done right now. It's like 6 needles. I did not know that it was going to be like 6 separate needles.
I saw that and I was like, what the hell? Where are those needles going?
Yeah, seriously. Only so many can go into straight into
certain veins. Yeah,
I thought they were doing it. I thought it was happening. I was like, I was like, I know this doesn't happen in the books, but let's fucking go. I wanted this change so badly. And then, of course, Geralt shows up at the last second.
That's going on through where Geralt and
Istrid
are, you know, just seeing the Geralt, because when shit's starting to hit the fan
in the vision,
when shit's starting to hit the fan in the vision, Ciri starts yelling for Geralt, you know, and he can hear it through, you know, what's going on in the monolith. And then he goes to Istrid, says, we need a portal right now.
And then that's when he
shows back up to Ciri.
Before she gets poked by Vesemir.
And that's where Istrid's pretty much like, who's yelling your name and who is this chick? I need to know. I need some answers here, man.
And he's like,
Istrid's rational.
Yeah, right?
I thought they were going to do it too. To be honest, I thought they did actually give Ciri the potion in the books and that it like made her have a crazy reaction. I could be mixing it up with something else, but I swear I thought she actually did go through Child of the Grasses.
You might be right, honestly. I just didn't remember her. She doesn't get through the full transformation and shit, right? Like, she doesn't have, like,
no
vision.
No.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, somebody leave a comment and correct us because I can't remember.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked how Geralt had the line. Ciri saying, I want to protect myself. I want to be like you, you know, indifferent to the past, to the lies, to the things I've done. Geralt, Henry Cavill, dreamy eyes McGee. So nice. That is not how it works. Neither you nor I can just forget who we are. We can't kill our feelings. Our best chance is to kill the hatred that we may hold on to and move on. And as he says this, the camera shoots to Vesemir real quick, and it looks like he took it pretty hard as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he has a lot of hatred.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it the Witcher training that makes them able to like not... to like control their feelings and not feel feelings and only do what they need to do? Or is it actually the potion that removes quote unquote their feelings? Like, cause Ciri's saying like, I want to get rid of my past. I want to stop caring about it. It's like, I mean, if you really want to, let's put you through that Witcher training. It's not the potion that does that unless I'm wrong.
It's kind of a combination of everything, I would say.
Don't some of the trials, like they give them the potion that make them do something. And like, that's part of the trial. So it's kind of a combination of both. I don't really remember.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look this up. I know I haven't, but there are a few different trials, and one of them's the grasses, and that's the one that change your eyes, but there's another one that would change is the ability to give you all the reflexes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get that into it in the books. And honestly, the Nightmare of the Wolf prequel animated series does even a little bit more than the books do in terms of explicitly showing you the trials.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't show everything either. It's kind of like a mystique thing going on.
I'm wondering if Blood Origin will show us if it's going to be the first Witchers.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
So for this Witcher universe, because I can't speak for the books in certainty, but for this universe, we have the Trial of the Grasses, which is the potion of various alchemical ingredients, which affects their nervous system, aka their enhanced reflexes. And then we have the Trial of Dreams, which is, you know, they'll give the mutation of the eyes and the bone marrow and the hormones. And that's what makes them, you know, infertile. And then you have the Trial of the Mountains, which is, you know, the trail that we see them running through. But yeah, Vesemir looked like he really took that to heart. And Geralt just does the rest of Ciri's straps and lets her go and looks at Vesemir with a I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. Look, yeah. He walks away. And that's pretty much it. I mean, we got Istrid kind of going to his library, see that he was pulling out the Sintra line. I think we might have already said that. Apologizes to King Ragnir. That's just a cool Sintra King bringing up. But yeah, that was pretty much it for episode 5. That's going to do it for us. If you guys like what you heard, our podcast also covers Wheel of Time, Dexter, Midnight Mass, Rick and Morty, all different kinds of shows. But most importantly, a lot of good stuff. If you want to toss a coin to your Bingetown, we have a Patreon up where you can become a Bingetown homie, follow us on Instagram and Twitter, subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Or the easiest way to do all that is check us out on our website, bingetowntv.com. We're so excited to cover The Witcher, and we're so happy to have you here along with us. So from everyone at Bingetown, thank you so much for listening.